Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran, every day and always. It's the Happy Thursday edition of The Cross in the Desert. I'm your host, Randy Noble, and hope that you're having a good week so far. Just this past Tuesday, all of us were pleasantly surprised about the great news concerning Miriam Ebrahimi and her two children and husband from the Sudan government. It was announced that they were finally set free, that all of the charges of apostasy and the death penalty had been removed. Well, this was a very short-lived victory because less than 24 hours later, 40 security agents had rearrested Miriam Ebrahimi. Now, the American Center for Law and Justice, the ACLG, today called on President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry to take whatever action necessary to secure safe passage to the United States for Miriam Ebrahim and her family. They are still conflicting reports concerning the whereabouts of Miriam, her husband, and two young children. The three of them, by the way, are U.S. citizens. Sudanese officials took the family into custody yesterday at the airport, one day after releasing Miriam and her two children from prison. Now, Jordan Seculo of the ACLJ says the actions of the Sudanese government are absolutely reprehensible. Whether they have technically been arrested or detained, they are still being held against their will by Sudanese officials. While the State Department says it's engaged in efforts to free Miriam and her family, it is clear that this international incident requires the attention of both President Obama and Secretary Kerry. They must take whatever action is necessary to ensure that Miriam and her American family are released without delay and receive safe passage to the United States. Detaining Miriam and her American husband and kids is intolerable. Right up on my Facebook page, you just scroll down a little bit, you're going to see a petition from the American Center for Law and Justice. We must engage forcefully, prayerfully in this fight. This is deplorable what they have done to this young woman and her beautiful children and husband. It was first speculated that they tried to accuse her of leaving the Sudan with phony documents, but we're still not clear on every angle why she's being held, other than the fact it is persecution against her Christian faith, persecution against them personally. So you and I must do whatever it takes to sound the alarm to President Obama, to Secretary of State Kerry, that they must intervene in this situation. Just yesterday, Missouri State Senator Roy Blunt had a few choice words to say about calling for the release of Miriam Ebrahimi as well as Saeed Abedini. I want you to hear this address by Missouri State Roy Blunt right here on the Cross in the Desert.
Madam President, I want to talk today about a couple of different issues. One, the basic issue, the first freedom and the First Amendment in our country that most people in the world today are seeing in jeopardy, and that's freedom of religion. Just finishing reading an article here from the BBC about the current status of Maryam Ibrahim. Just 2 days ago, she was released from her death sentence in Sudan, and many people in this building, many people around the world applauded that. Her death sentence was a death sentence that she had that had been issued because she wouldn't disavow her Christian faith. And in fact, for months she'd been held in prison. She had a child born while she was in prison. She had a young child with her while she was in prison. The birth of the baby and then the early months of the baby's life had been decided that would be the determining factor as to when she would be first beaten and then hanged because she wouldn't disavow her faith. 2 days ago, she and her two children were set free. She's the wife of a U.S. citizen, a naturalized U.S. citizen. She had been imprisoned by this government, and unfairly so. Many of my colleagues have been working to secure her release. Last month, Senator Ayotte and I sent a letter to Secretary Kerry urging him to offer and provide political asylum for her immediately. Shouldn't have to provide asylum for her family. Her husband's a U.S. citizen. Both of her children, because of that, would be a U.S. citizen. But because of her faith, she had been sentenced to a death sentence. The State Department wondered how much jurisdiction it had in this case, and so Senator Ayotte and I sent another letter, both to the State Department and to Homeland Security for that agency's ability to impact whether people can leave a country or come into a country. On Monday, it looked like this situation was moving in the right direction. She was reported to be acquitted. She was set free. She was allowed to join her husband and their children at the airport. But yesterday, when they tried to leave the airport, news outlets reported that she was rearrested. Now, I hope rearrested as opposed to detained for paperwork is the wrong term. But the Sudanese government needs to let her go. If they are so concerned about these issues of faith that they don't want someone there that is willing to promote another faith or at least live another faith, they should at the very least let her leave the country. I think asylum in the United States for her U.S. citizen husband, her U.S. citizen children, and her would be an appropriate thing. And then the danger they feel they face by someone who's willing to profess another faith would be gone. I can't imagine why the Sudanese government would not want to let her leave the country, and I'd just like to encourage them today to do that. CBS News reported that the NISS, they described as a shadowy, feared institution, said on its Facebook page that Ibrahim and her family had been attempting to travel to the United States with documents from the embassy of South Sudan. If Sudan wasn't confusing enough for the rest of the world, that country, because of its many problems, split between the North and the South after years of civil war in 2011. And Ms. Ibrahim had a U.S. visa, apparently documents reportedly, at least by this news report, possibly from South Sudan. But those documents should have been enough to let her leave and should not have been considered another criminal offense. These authorities have told reporters that Maryam Ibrahim was using a valid travel document issued by the embassy of South Sudan, but her valid travel documents suddenly is not good. The State Department, I hope, is doing everything they can, working with the Sudanese government to secure that this family is able to come back to the United States. This continued harassment over someone's faith has to end. We need to be doing everything we can. Her husband is a U.S. citizen. Her children are U.S. citizens. This is an American family, Madam President, and Sudan should let them leave and let them leave now. And if this was the only problem like this in the world, it would be a terrible problem. But there are problems like this in so many places in the world now. And the one faith you apparently can't profess is the Christian faith. When the news of her death sentence, of Miriam's death sentence came, it was about the same day that reports of another American citizen, Pastor Saheed Abedini, had been beaten badly in the hospital that he was in Iran, and he was there because of his faith, and he was being taken to a prison that was notoriously an Iranian prison that's the most dangerous prison you could possibly be in Iran. Last year, I joined with 11 of my colleagues here, sending a letter to, at the time, it was Secretary Clinton was leaving, urging her to use every resource we had to secure his release as well. Our letter condemned the Iranian government for his prosecution. He was born in Iran. He converted to Christianity as a teenager. Before moving to the United States with his wife, he established some churches that were underground churches in that country. In 2009, he went back. He was arrested for so-called Christian activities. He was released on bail. He agreed not to continue his work with the underground churches, but as he was traveling back and forth between the United States and Iran in recent years, he was working to establish orphanages, non-religious orphanages in Iran. But in September of 2012, he was detained after he lawfully came into Iran through Turkey. He's now serving an 8-year jail sentence on charges related to his Christian faith. And all the time he's been there, he has been interrogated intensely. He's been beaten to the point he had to be taken to the hospital. Then he was beaten at the hospital. Then he was taken to the most dangerous prison you could take a person to in Iran. These kinds of activities can't be allowed to continue. You know, how we could be moving forward with any kind of talks with the Iranians and not ask for such a simple gesture as let this U.S. citizen go, let him come back to the United States, don't kill him in one of your prisons or one of your hospitals, as just the first of good faith effort to have these discussions. I hope the president will step forward along with the Secretary of State and talk about these grave abuses of human rights. Last year, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee reported out a bipartisan bill to appoint a special envoy for the purpose of promoting religious freedom among religious minorities in the Near East and South Asia. The House has already passed this bill. This continued violence, particularly against Christians, but against all other religions that governments are in disagreement with, is deeply disturbing. It defies the freedoms that we hold dear. Whether people's right to, when people's right to their own religious beliefs are abused, in the Middle East, in Sudan, or anywhere else, the United States of America should be the first country to step up and say, we're going to do whatever we can to ensure more religious freedom.
That is Missouri Senator Roy Blunt with some very poignant words calling for the release of Miriam Ebrahimi and Saeed Abedini. And I really applaud the senator for taking the time out of his busy life to speak up for these American citizens. It's almost unimaginable for me to sit here and to think that we are not making them a priority. Why are we dragging our feet when it comes to our own people? And it's just deplorable. There's no words that can describe my feelings and emotions that Saeed and Miriam are not home. And also Amir Hekamati. And I thank you for coming and joining us today, Sarah, in the chat room. Thank you so much. I know you're working hard to make Amir's case known all over the world and working with his family to help raise funds for him. Thank you so much for your hard work, Sarah. We're doing all that we can here on the Cross in the Desert to keep his case alive as well. Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Cross in the Desert. I have a few items of good news, if that was a little bit depressing to hear that. You remember about June 7th, Christian pastor Benham Orani went missing from his jail cell, his prison cell in Karaj, Iran. Most of us as Human Rights Act really feared for his life because when this has happened before to Christians in Iran, and they are usually taken away and brutally tortured and sometimes left for dead. Well, just the other day, my good friend Shadi Pave had up on her status about Pastor Benham Orani. I want to read this to you. Pastor Benham Orani has been returned to his cell, according to the HRANA. He was interrogated for 20 hours and was told that if he does not stop his activities inside prison, he would be given longer prison sentence. And Shadi remarks, you may ask, why did they bring him during the interrogations? What did they do to him? Well, I personally think we need to look at Arash Saji's case when he went missing. They tortured Arash, broke his shoulder and rib. And then Shadi writes, thank you all for posting for Pastor Benhami. When the regime knows that the world is watching, they stop short of killing the prisoner. Same was true of Arash Sajaji when activists went crazy on Twitter and Facebook asking where he was. This is good news in one sense, that he has been returned to his prison cell safely. But let's continue to speak out and pray for his release so he can leave this prison cell not to be interrogated, not to be tortured, but to be set free and be reunited with his family. But once again, thank all of you for praying and speaking out. He was missing for many, many days, and now he's back in his jail cell. That in itself is good news, but let's continue to speak out and pray for his release. Just the other day, I was thinking about just the cost of following Jesus and thinking about Saeed and Amir and Farshad Fathi and Pastor Benham Orani, and it occurred to me that their lives, their testimony, their dedication speaks volumes to you and me. You see, the church can learn so much from their faithfulness, from their endurance. You see, I feel as though in many, many quarters of the church here in the United States, we are too busy in our comfortable zone. And most of the churches are too busy promoting a false gospel, promoting a gospel of health, wealth, and prosperity. And they have no room for suffering like Saeed does, like Amir does, like Benham does, like Miriam does. And so what I want to do this morning, I want to reacquaint us with the cost of following Jesus. Now, you may be listening and you say, I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I'm not into the health, wealth, and prosperity thing, and I'm glad you're not. But there may be those out there that are. And we need to hear these sobering words from author David Platt, who has written two groundbreaking books on the subject of the cost of following Jesus, Radical and Follow Me. What I want to do now is play a couple of clips from his presentation. When you think of what does it mean to follow Jesus, this might help you to understand more the cost. This first one is kind of a sermon jam. And it may be different for you to listen to, but listen intensely. And then I'm going to play something, a short little speech by him called Radical Risk, Radical Rewards. And following up on that is David Platt describing his new book, Follow Me. I find that this author has really connected with the true cost of following Jesus. And when I think of Saeed and Miriam and Benham and what they suffer with every day, we can learn from them. So let's also learn this morning from David Platt on the cross in the desert. Let's listen.
We do not have time to waste our lives. And our ministry is living out a nice, comfortable Christian spin on the American dream. We have a master who demands radical sacrifice and a mission that warrants radical urgency. Someone said to him being Jesus, "I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." To another he said, "Follow me." But he said, "Lord, first let me go back and bury my father." And Jesus said to him, "Leave the dead to bury their own dead. But as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God." Yet another said, "I will follow you, Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at my home." Jesus said to him, "No one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God." He takes it a step deeper. He says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now we have, for great reason, reverence and respect for the cross. But we've got to put ourselves in the shoes of first century hearers when they hear this statement. Pick up an instrument of torture reserved for the most vile and shamed of criminals. Imagine following an obscure religious teacher in the 21st century, him turning around and saying, "If you're going to follow after me, you need to pick up your electric chair and follow me." This is really weird. Then you get to the end of that passage, the pull at your heartstrings conclusion. Jesus says, you must give up everything you have in order to follow me. Give up everything you have, pick up an instrument of torture, hate your mom and dad. That's a lot different than admit, believe, confess, and pray the prayer. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of these first century hearers. What if Jesus told us to give up everything we have? What if Jesus told us to hate our mom and dad, wife and kids? What if Jesus told us to deny ourselves and take up an instrument of torture? And this is where we come face to face with the frightening reality. Jesus has said these things to us. Are we going to choose comfort, or are we going to choose the cross? Jesus warned us, you do not follow me to advance yourself. I am not a means for you to advance yourself. I am the end in and of myself. When you follow after me, I am all you've got. Not even guaranteed the basic need of shelter. You find your sufficiency in me. We were created, we are commanded to take the glory of God, the gospel of Christ, to the ends of the earth. This consumes us. This saturates us. This motivates us in everything we do, whether we're pastoring or we are serving as a missionary or anywhere in between, wherever we are, wherever we live, whatever we're doing, whatever position we have, reading, studying, preaching. We are doing it to proclaim the kingdom of God to the ends of the earth.
We do not have time to play games with our lives. And we don't have time to play games in the church. We do not have time to waste our lives on a nice, comfortable Christian spin on the American dream. We have a master who demands radical sacrifice, a mission that warrants radical urgency. So this morning, by the grace of God, pray on the authority of the Word of God. I want to call you to forsake dreams and plans
and possessions and houses and cars and ideas of a nice, safe, comfortable American Christian life, I want to call you to forsake it all in radical abandonment to Jesus Christ for the sake of His glory among all peoples. We take Jesus, we twist Him into a nice middle-class American Jesus who looks like us and thinks like us and talks like us. And here's the danger. As we take Jesus and we craft Him into our own image, then the reality is when we gather together in our churches to sing our songs and lift our hands, we are not lifting our hands to and worshiping the Jesus of the Bible. We are lifting up our hands to and worshiping ourselves. And so what happens when not just pastors or missionaries, but when every person among the people of God, when every single one of us is using the gifts and skills and passions and resources that God has entrusted to us to advance the kingdom of God to the ends of the earth? Brothers and sisters, the gates of hell cannot stop the advancement of God's kingdom when that becomes a reality all across the church. When we are all across the board sacrificing our lives for mission.
So I've got this friend, I'll call him John. John's first exposure to the whole concept of hell was when he was watching a Tom and Jerry cartoon when he was younger. And what was intended to be this humorous cartoon all of a sudden turned into this hellacious nightmare when Tom did something bad to Jerry and was thrown into hell as a result. And later, John was at his church and he was talking with an older man about what he'd seen. And the older man looked at John and said, "John, you don't want to go to hell, do you?" John said, "No." So the man looked back at him and said, "Okay, pray this prayer after me. Dear Jesus." John kind of paused. There's some awkward silence, and then he realized he was supposed to say exactly what the man had said. So he said, "Dear Jesus." And the man continued, "I know that I'm a sinner, and I believe that Jesus died for my sins, and I ask you to come into my heart and save me." And then when they were finished, the man looked at John and said, "Son, now you can know that you are saved from your sins and you don't ever have to worry about hell again." Is that true? Is this really what it means to become a disciple of Jesus? Is this really what it means to follow Him? You look back at the first disciples in the Bible, and when Jesus came up to them and said, "Follow me," that was not an invitation to pray a prayer. That was a summons for these men to lose their lives. Somewhere along the way, 2,000 years later, amid varying cultural ties and popular church trends, we have virtually missed that call. With good intentions, with sincere desires to reach as many people as possible for Jesus, we've taken challenging words from Christ and turned them into trite phrases in the church. And in the process, we've drained the lifeblood out of Christianity and replaced it with a watered-down version of the gospel that is so palatable, it's not even real anymore. And the consequences are catastrophic. Scores of men, women, and children culturally identify themselves as Christians today who biblically are not followers of Christ. Is that possible? Absolutely it is. In fact, according to Jesus, it's probable. He said at the end of his most famous sermon, "Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles?' And I will tell them, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.'" Those are some of the most frightening words in all of the Bible. As a pastor, I stay awake some nights haunted by the thought that many people who are sitting in church on Sunday will be shocked to stand before Jesus one day and hear Him say to them, "I never knew you. Away from me." We desperately need to take a look at our lives and our churches and ask the question, are we really, biblically, personally following Jesus? Eternity is dependent on how we answer that question.
Some sobering, challenging words from author David Platt from the book Follow Me, A Call to Live and A Call to Die. It is a healthy thing to examine our faith. Examine yourself to see if you be in the faith, the Apostle Paul says. It is an important thing to count the cost for following Jesus. I think the church does need to take a more serious look at those sobering words. I understand where he's coming from. I know that there are issues of concern with me too. And I think about following Jesus, but in the false would be separated from, I think, a lot of tribulation, a lot of persecution. And when I think of Saeed and Miriam and Farshad and Benham, I truly believe with all my heart, they understand the risk. They understand the cost for following Jesus. And as I mentioned before, I played these clips. We can learn so much from them. And the church can learn so much from their faithful endurance. Could I take a short break now with some great worship music? A theme we're just talking about, that Jesus is enough. This is Hillsong with the acoustic version of Christ is Enough right now on the cross in the desert. Beautiful song. Let's take a moment to listen.
All of my devotion. Now there's nothing in this world that could ever satisfy. Through every trial, my soul will sing, no turning back. I've been set free.
Everything I need.
I have decided to follow Jesus, the cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back, no turning back. Reuben Morgan, Hillsong, acoustic version of a tremendous song called Christ Is Enough from Glorious Ruin. Hillsong has just produced some of the most quality Christian music in the world from Australia. And their brethren, they're gifted in their music so well. And I was glad to hear that acoustic version of a tremendous song. It's on the theme of what we're talking about today. Christ is enough. It's so easy sometimes to miss the richness of the treasure of Christ that we become preoccupied with the substitute. And the sad thing is sometimes we don't even know that we're really not worshiping him. Well, let's be careful there. And let's follow Jesus as he told us to. Come follow me. Speaking of following Jesus, it was about a year and a half ago that I read a book that really, really changed my life. The name of that book is Captive in Iran. And it was a year and a half ago on Facebook I met the two young ladies I had prayed so faithfully for, Miriam and Marzea, to you, that they had with Mike Huckabee about a year ago. I thought it was a very powerful interview. I loved the questions and the points that Mike made during this interview. And since we're talking about the cost of following Jesus, their life story of how God used them mightily in Evan prison, how their prison became a church pulpit, how God used them so faithfully during their time of being held captive in Iran. I want you to hear this interview because it follows so well the theme of our program today. The cost of following Jesus. Here's Miriam and Marzea on that interview right now on the cross in the desert.
The headlines focus on the growing violence between the new Egyptian government and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. But the mainstream media is not really talking about the persecution of Christians in the country. The Muslim Brotherhood has torched nearly two dozen Coptic Christian churches in Egypt, and they set fire to a Christian youth center on Friday. Last week, a 10-year-old Christian girl was shot and killed in the street, simply walking home from Bible class. My next guests know all too well what it's like being a persecuted Christian in a predominantly Muslim country. They're both born to Muslim families, but converted to Christianity. They were both arrested in 2009 and jailed in Tehran's notorious Evin prison. They were sentenced to death. That's after witnessing the horrors of the prison. They were finally freed after continued international pressure and given asylum in the U.S. Their story is told in the remarkable and compelling book, Captive in Iran. Joining me are Miriam Rostampour and Marzea Amirizadeh. And it's so nice to have both of you here. When I think of the fact both of you were jailed and given death sentences, that you're even here is nothing short of a miracle. Why were you put in prison? And Marzea, I'll let you start. Why were you put in prison and given a death sentence?
We had a mission in Iran, and we were distributing 20,000 New Testaments in Tehran and a few other cities. Also, we were evangelizing Iranian people every day. Whenever we went for shopping, eating at restaurant, or doing our chores, we were talking to people and handing them a Bible as a gift. Because as you know, in Iran, there is just a false and distorted version of Bible, and people, they don't have any access to the real Bible. That's why we had this passion in our hearts to put the real Bible in people's hands. And also we had two house churches. One was for prostitutes and the other one was for young people in our own apartment. As you know, all these activities are illegal in Iran because no one is allowed to promote any religion except Islam. And some people had reported about us, and the Iranian government had found about our activities, and they arrested us in 2009.
You must have been totally frightened. I mean, you're arrested, and it's not like you murdered anyone. You haven't committed any act of violence. You've given out Bibles, and for that, you're given a death sentence?
Yes. Actually, the first day we were so afraid because we are two human beings, and it was like a big shock for us. And when they transferred us to the security police and they threatened us to physical torture, we were so scared and we just prayed for each other. The only thing that helped us survive that situation was the presence of Holy Spirit with us.
If you had renounced your Christian faith and said you apologized, would the death sentence have been removed from you?
Yes, and sometimes they told us that even you can write one sentence that you convert from Christianity to Islam, and we will release you immediately.
But you didn't do that. Under the sheer knowledge that you would be put to death, you did not renounce your Christian faith. Why not?
Yes, because we both had many experiences with Jesus, and we are not just converted to Christian religion. And we are both in love with Jesus. We had seen many miracles. We meet him, we touch his love. And because of all our personal relationship with him, we couldn't deny Jesus, because denying him, it was like denying ourselves. And also, Jesus in Bible says, if you wish to follow me, you must pick up your own cross and follow me. And as a follower of Jesus, it was very important for us to pass through this test with victory. And also, it was an honor for us to suffer for our faith.
You know, I think of all the American Christians I know that at the least little bit of trouble, someone just says something that is unpleasant to them, they all but renounce Jesus. You guys are willing to die, and you're not going to renounce him. And it's such a powerful wake-up call to those of us who live with this illusion that everybody in the world can go ahead and worship like they want to. The Quran is given to people in your country of Iran, but they can't read it because they speak Farsi and they're given an Arabic Bible. So there's a wide opening, isn't there, for Christian faith?
And we had this problem from our childhood because we couldn't read the Quran. It was in Arabic. As you said, our language is Farsi. And most people in Iran do not know anything about Islam or the Quran because it's in Arabic. And they are tired of the wrong rules of Islam, and they are so thirsty to hear about Christianity and the message of Jesus, because his message is about grace and love, which is completely different from the teachings of the Quran.
There was a lot of pressure from the international community to help you. Do you feel God just intervene in your lives to get you out so that as you come to the U.S. for asylum, you can get this message out and tell people of your experience and the opportunities that are there?
Yes, because of all this international pressure on Iranian government, they had to release us. And also many Christians, they were supporting us either by praying and sending letters to prison, which made a huge difference, and their behaviors completely changed. And all because of all these activities and pressure, the Iranian government had to release us.
Well, I hope people will get the book and read it. It's just a remarkable story. I want to say what you have done to encourage me and challenge me when I think about the two of you being placed under a death sentence in an Iranian prison and you still would not renounce your faith. It really does bring, I think, a real conviction to all of us who have it awfully easy.
Miriam Rostenpar and Marzea Amarizadeh on Mike Huckabee last August. Just a powerful, powerful testimony. These are incredible ladies, and I had them on the cross in the desert last September, a very memorable time in my life. They are every bit just like you hear them. They're very dedicated. Do you know their book, Captive in Iran, has been published in several languages, Swedish, Spanish, other languages. I can't think of them all right now. And currently, they are in South Africa talking about their experience to South Africans. They are traveling literally all over the world. They started their book tour April of last year, and they have been on so many noticeable venues all across the United States, many media outlets. They were in Washington. God has just incredibly used them, and I am waiting for their newest book. I don't know when they will begin writing it, if they have, and when it will be published, but they have promised me they're writing on the subject of women and Islam. And so this is a book I can't wait to read. I hope they have began writing it, but I know it's going to be very, very good. Well, and I think of the cost of following Jesus and what we just heard from David Platt, from Miriam and Marzea, I have a question for all of us. Where is your church? This is a common question that most Christians ask each other. Where is your church? Where do you worship at? Where do you meet on Sunday? Well, in our culture today, most churches are built to look like shopping malls to attract the sensitive seeker and make him feel right at home. Most churches, of course, have comfortable padded pews with state-of-the-art video and audio technology, and even come complete, some churches, with cafeterias. Well, if we're honest, most of our churches are insulated from the real world in a comfortable zone where members can be sheltered from all of the chaos and confusion. The Sunday sermon sometimes amounts to little more than a pep talk that's guaranteed to get you out in time for lunch or before the start of a major sporting event. Well, my life has been challenged and transformed. Like I mentioned to you, I've been reading Captive in Iran by my two Facebook friends, Miriam and Marzea. I've also been emotionally consumed by the ongoing crisis of my brother Saeed Abedini and Evan prison. Well, actually, when I wrote this, he was still in Evan. He's now in Karaj. At the same time, I have a friend named Ebi. He's a Christian. He lives in Tehran. And he shared with me a few months ago that he was just released from jail after being lashed 76 times for his faith. Jesus preached in the synagogues, but you know, he didn't stay there. He went out among the hurting and broken. By doing that, he risked his reputation among the religious elite of his day. The religious establishment didn't like that he associated with the tax collectors and the sinners. By the way, the elite religious crowd are still with us today. They haven't went away. So my question still remains, where is your church? Miriam and Marzea's church for 259 days was the first church of worship in Evan prison in Tehran, where God used them powerfully as they reached out to prostitutes, political prisoners, and outcasts with the gospel. Pastor Saeed's church has been the ongoing crucible of suffering in Karaj, where he is learning about the power of forgiveness and endurance. Ebi's church was the painful, stinging leather straps whipped against his bare back. Where is your church? Is it safely inside four walls and padded pews, or is your church outside of the box, among the broken and hopeless, where it is dangerous, risky, and inconvenient? I have been challenged to step out of my boat, out of the comfort zone, to go where the real needs are. It's true I write about Islam and Muslims, and I chat with them on the Internet. But here I do it in a safe environment. It's really no risk to my life as I sit here before my computer. All of us need our faith challenged and strengthened. The days of playing church really ought to be over. A hurting and dying culture needs our love and compassion. Will you join me? This past weekend, my dear friend Shadi Pave posted a picture that has been a real life-transforming event as well. It's a picture drawn by a four-year-old girl named Mohana Ahmadi. And you'd almost have to see this picture. In fact, this weekend on my video edition of The Cross in the Desert, I will show you this picture. You can also see it on my Facebook page. You see, her father, Hamed Ahmadi, is among four Kurdish prisoners in danger of imminent execution. They were forced to confess to a murder they didn't commit under torture. Their families came out, and they gathered outside the Gazelle Hisar prison June 14th, demanding their death sentences be revoked. 80 Sunni prisoners inside Ward 12 of Raji prison have been on a hunger strike in support of these four Kurdish prisoners. Hamed Ahmadi Kamal Moli, Jamsed, and Jangar Delgani, are Sunni Kurds, who were first arrested and prosecuted for murdering a pro-government Sunni clerk. But they were later acquitted of this charge and then tried at Branch 28 of the Tehran Revolutionary Court under Judge Mogashi on charges of Mohabara, which means enmity with God, and acting against national security by supporting opposition Kurdish parties. They were not even given the right to defend themselves in court. After their trial, the judge told them, "Be quiet. You are Sunni dogs who must be hanged," and told them they didn't have the right to object and that they had to leave the court quickly. Their families were not allowed to object because the intelligence agents kept threatening them into silence. The brothers Jamshid and Jangahar Delgani were arrested on June 17, 2009. Kamal Moli was arrested on July 15, 2009. And Hamid Ahmadi was arrested on July 30, 2009. Initially, they were held guilty or responsible for assassinating this man, but that charge has been overturned. And now they're going to be put to death for acting against national security, for being at enmity with God, because they are Sunni Kurdish Muslims. And these men are peacefully enjoying their own religious observance as Sunnis. It's so heartbreaking for four-year-old Mahani Ahmadi to understand why this is happening to her father. And you know, God has a marvelous way of bringing to reality the hurts of children. And I think in this way, he has allowed this beautiful, I didn't say beautiful, this heartbreaking drawing made by a four-year-old. All she understands right now is that her father that she loves can't be with her. And all that she understands is that she is going to be hanged. And so in her own way, I guess she took a crayon and drew a picture of her mother and her holding hands and standing before the boom crane where her father is going to be hanged one day. She made this little drawing. Unbeknownst to her, this drawing is being looked at all over the world. And four-year-old Mahana, in her own way, is saying to us, "I don't understand what is going on. All I can do is draw to you what's going to happen to my daddy." And in her own way, she's trying to say, "Please don't hang my daddy." If you see this drawing, it touches the heartstrings. It breaks your heart. This little innocent girl is trying to grasp the reality of evil. 4 years old, and she's trying to say, "I don't understand this. This is evil. This is wrong. And this is all I can draw right now because my dad, whom I love so much, is going to be hanged simply because he's a Sunni Muslim." And you understand in Iran, the predominant religion, of course, is Islam. That particular branch of Islam is Shia Islam. And Shias and Sunnis don't get along, of course. The Sunnis don't agree with the Shiite interpretation of who succeeded Muhammad. And in Shia Islam in Iran, they have a particular view that Ali was the rightful successor to Muhammad. And they have a branch of Islam that deals with the 12 imams. One of the imams, the return of the Mahdi, is what they expect. And so they have this continual battle between Sunnis and Shias. This is what goes on. And so according to Shia Islam, Sunnis are at enmity with God. They're dogs worthy of death. And so we have this beautiful young girl trying to say, I don't understand all of this religious stuff. I don't understand anything except I love my dad, and he's going to be hanged. On my Facebook page, you will come down to this particular picture, and there is a link to a petition where you can go to this petition for this man, Hamed Ahmadi. Do you know how much that would bless the heart of this 4-year-old girl, Mahana? That you would take a couple of minutes out of your busy life to go to this petition and speak out for her father? And maybe, perhaps, in the providence and mercy of God, instead of making a drawing of her father being hanged, she can draw a picture of running into the arms of her father instead. Please take the time to make your voice be made known. Merriman Marzaya told me the main reason they're on this book tour is not so much to promote their book. They'll talk about it, of course. But they want to be a voice for the voiceless, and that's my mission too. Please bless this little child. There's a petition there for all 4 prisoners. Please be their voice. We here in America value our freedom to worship, our freedom of religion. And in Iran, that is not a reality. If you're not a Muslim, it could mean certain death, especially if you convert to another religion, especially if you become a Christian. So this week in your busy life, I would ask that you would just remember 4-year-old Mahana Ahmadi, her mother and father, in your prayers. And think about your religious freedom and think about your ability to worship freely, and then think about her and how she longs to be in the arms of her father once again safely. You may say, do I really think this will happen? We will never know unless we speak out and pray, because that's what I do every day here on the Cross in the Desert, is challenge you to speak out and pray and to be a voice for the voiceless. What a difference you can make in the life of another human being when you do that. Please come to my Facebook page. Please sign the petition for Marion's release to come home here to the United States. Please sign the petition for Mahana's father. Thank you so much for spending your valuable time with me today. Thank you for spending time and hearing the challenge to follow Christ, no matter what the cross. I will see you next week on the Cross in the Desert. God bless you and have a great weekend.
Healing rain is coming down. Tears of joy.